Welcome to A World of Good podcast. I'm Nate Tapman.
And I'm Andrew Gale.
And we are two friends
who love Jesus,
care about the church,
and travel the world to share stories of people who do the same.
Our conversations happen in all kinds of places,
like a coffee shop in an airport terminal,
or even the back of a crowded taxi.
But no matter where we go, from Argentina to Zimbabwe,
we capture stories of the good God is doing around the world.
And we hope those stories will do you a world of good. Welcome, friends, to another episode of A World of Good podcast, recording from the Gale household today. I have two special guests who also want to say hi. Eleanor?
Hi.
And Eli?
Hi.
So, Eleanor, you are 7 years old, and your school has been off since spring break about a month ago. So tell us, what has it been like being stuck at home all the time?
I don't know. It's been fun.
Yeah, what kind of stuff have you been doing while you've been at home?
Coloring and making crafts and stuff.
Okay, awesome. Anything exciting happening in your life?
We get to be with family more.
Yeah, and you think, is that a good thing for you to be with your family more?
Yes.
Oh, that's a good answer. Good answer. And Eli, you are 3 years old.
Yeah. Yeah, you're 3 years old?
Huh?
What has it been like being home during the coronavirus pandemic?
Play with toys.
You've been playing with toys? What are some of your favorite toys to play with?
Buzz Lightyear.
It's hard to hear you when you're jumping on the bed. I wish people could see that.
Buzz Lightyear.
Buzz Lightyear. You like your Buzz Lightyear?
Uh-huh.
What has been your favorite thing you've done in this last month since we've been home?
Play with you.
Playing with me? Oh, what a great answer. And I have that recorded. I'm going to save this forever and play it for you when you're older to remind you how much fun you had with me.
I will be Dinmay.
You're going to be that mini? Yeah, you will someday. Well, thank you guys. Do you have anything else you want to tell everybody before we're done?
This is awesome.
Anything else you want to say, Eli?
Play outside.
You want to go play outside? Well, it's raining right now, but we will go outside sometime and play again. Guys, thank you so much for being a part of this recording.
Bye. Bye. Look, look.
This has become a family affair. Well, for the last few episodes, we have looked at the impact of the coronavirus pandemic and its effects in two different locations, Italy and the United States. If you haven't had a chance to check those out, they are both great episodes. And we want to thank Pastors Danny, Marcos, and Beth for taking time to share with us. Today, we get to hear more stories from the global church as they respond to the COVID-19 crisis. Mike and Heather Webb are executive directors of Children of Promise, a global child sponsorship program serving thousands of kids across the globe. And in the midst of these turbulent times, Children of Promise, in partnership with the local church on the ground, is stepping up to care for the most vulnerable demographics. In a moment of struggle, the church is making an impact. As in our last episodes, this interview was conducted over Zoom. Enjoy this conversation with Mike and Heather Webb. Well, welcome, Mike and Heather Webb. We're so grateful that you are here with us today. I say here with us, even though we're all sitting in different locations around the state of Indiana, but grateful that you're here via Zoom, that we can have a conversation about what's happening in the world. In the United States, we're hearing so much about coronavirus. Everybody is dealing with this in a lot of different ways, whether they're furloughed from their job or whether they're working from home or have kids that are at home. But we wanted today to talk about what's happening globally. What are some of the challenges that are being faced? What are the stories that we aren't hearing? I guess first, how many countries does Children of Promise work in globally?
We have programs in 30 countries at the moment. And some of those countries have multiple programs, but 30 different geographical locations.
Great. And Children of Promise, just for those that don't know, is a child sponsorship program. Tell us a little about what they do and what that looks like.
We're focusing on helping kids be on a path to wholeness. For Children of Promise, that means having the space to dream about the future while also having their current needs met through nutrition, education, healthcare, and discipleship through the local church. The local church plays a really big part in Children of Promise, and without discipleship through the local church, Children of Promise wouldn't be what it is. Mm-hmm. The church leaders are the ones who identify the kids in their community who are vulnerable and who could benefit from Children of Promise, from sponsorship, And they're the ones who administer the program, but are also walking alongside the children and their families.
So a lot of ways, Children of Promise empowers the local church then to support their communities. Is that kind of what I'm hearing?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's a really cool model.
In a lot of places, Children of Promise opens doors to the church to reach the community in ways that they wouldn't necessarily be able to reach. I think of specifically one community in Argentina where the community wasn't really that open to the church, but because of Children of Promise, they're able to get into homes that weren't interested in the gospel and reach the children in that way.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So we've heard a lot about the coronavirus and the issues in the United States. And for those that are following at home, you know, we've also heard a lot about these certain hotspots around the world, whether it's China, Italy, Spain. But I think one of the things that's difficult is outside of hearing about the United States and some of those hotspots, we don't often hear what's happening in these other countries around the world. And you guys said you work in 30 countries. So what does the situation look like in some of the places where you serve? How is coronavirus changing the realities for some of your families, and what are they experiencing?
Yeah, interestingly, in most of the places where we have programs in operation, the coronavirus hasn't taken significant root as it has in places like Italy, Spain, United States, China.
As far as number of cases go.
In terms of the number of cases, there are cases and it is spreading. What's so interesting, though, beyond that is the response of the government to the few cases, I think because they're watching what's happening in the rest of the world. So, for example, we had a conversation with a program director this morning who's in Tanzania, and he was telling us that there really aren't that many cases. I mean, any cases is not good, but there are not that many cases in the country, but the response of the government is very, very strict. And we talked with another of our directors in Southern Africa yesterday who said the same thing. There are very few cases, but the strategy for addressing the spread of the disease is prevention. So they're going on to very, very strict lockdown measures. And in some places around the world, that can mean even danger for people to go outside. You know, they can experience any number of events of retribution for being outdoors. And so the biggest thing that we're seeing is that people aren't allowed to go out, even in places where the coronavirus hasn't spread largely. And if they do go out, they put themselves at risk, not just to get sick, but for being disobedient of the government regulations and structures.
That's really interesting. And so it's as if those governments are trying to deal with the issue before it really hits their country in some ways. Is that a fair way of saying that? But in doing that, they're doing it in a very, it seems like a very drastic sort of a way.
Yeah, it can be very drastic. And in addition to that, what that's meant for especially a lot of the Children of Promise families where their children are being sponsored from folks here in the US or in Canada and elsewhere, is that a lot of the parents are vendors and they're not allowed to go out and do business. So instead of being able to be out selling vegetables or fruit or clothing or whatever it is that happens to be their business, they're stuck in their homes, unable to have any form of income for the family. So a lot of the families are really struggling to just get the basic items that they need, food items and clothing items and hygiene items. We've been really thankful that because Children of Promise has been around for a while, we've got a built-in infrastructure of the delivery of those kinds of items from directors and local volunteers to the families that need them. So the need is heightened, but thankfully we've got a means to meet the need.
Yeah. Would you say that, what is the biggest need that you see globally? You know, we hear that there's, you know, financial issues, food insecurity, but based on kind of your connections and your conversations, what are you hearing as kind of the biggest need that's coming out of this?
I think probably the biggest issue right now is nutrition. Like Mike was saying, if the parents aren't able to work, the nutritional things that Children of Promise is able to deliver to each child isn't sufficient to, it's a supplement to what the parents are able to provide. And so now we have entire families who don't have the income that they would normally rely on to feed their families, supplemented with what Children of Promise is able to provide. And then in addition to that, the prices of things are skyrocketing. The supply of things is diminishing. just like we see in the US with toilet paper and with other things, you know, the shelves are empty. The prices of the things that are there are two or three times what they normally are. And so and then we have these parents who aren't able to go to work because the communities are in lockdown. So it's a really, it's a dire situation for many, many, many people.
Yeah. As you talk to people, what are some stories? Are there some specific stories coming out of kind of last few weeks or months in terms of the coronavirus and how communities, local leaders are responding?
Yeah, we had a great conversation with our director in the Philippines last night, and she told some wonderful stories. The Children of Promise program there is called the Grace Family Helper Project. And they've been around for quite some time, and they partner very closely with a lot of government and other non-government institutions to provide the care to the families that are in need. But what's really exciting about the way that they're doing that is because they've been around for a long time and they've been registered with the government and they have a record of impacting these families in a positive way. Even though there's a pretty strict lockdown governmentally, they're given a pass to get to the families who need them. So Marlene was sharing with us about how when they, you know, pull up to a road stop or they have an encounter with a government official who might otherwise turn them away or punish them for being out and about, they're given a pass to go ahead and go through whatever checkpoint they're going through so that they can continue to minister to the community needs. So in some ways, it's providing an opportunity for the church to be the point of contact and the point of hope for families, because as people are not allowed to go out, certain folks in the church and through Children of Promise are able to be out and about and still meeting the needs. So it's putting them in a position to really provide hope for families who would otherwise really be struggling on their own, locked in their homes.
Another one of the stories that Marlene told was that the timing of the Children of Promise distribution in the Philippines happened just right after the country was locked down. And so Children of Promise became this first responder in the Philippines where the government hadn't even been able to organize to be able to respond to the needs of the community. And so just a great testimony for the church there to be able to respond to real felt needs in a moment of desperation.
I think that's one of the things that's so important for us right now as a church is that we do make ourselves a viable part of the communities that we're a part of, you know, and so that when we get past this, whatever that looks like, I mean, it's not that it's going to go back to the way that it was, but whatever this new normal is, that there is a sense that the church has not deserted the community, but been intimately involved in the support of the community through this. And that's really cool to hear about a place where that's happening.
One of the great stories that we heard coming out of Uganda is that many of the wives and mothers have received some sewing training over the years. And so they've been given some instructions on how to sew face masks so that even in the times when they're not able to do their normal jobs, maybe they're able to sew face masks that they can sell for a small income. And similar things are happening in the Philippines as well.
That's very cool. So reorganizing the way that you're engaging so that you continue to support the work that's happening, but in this really unique time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for a lot of Americans, we're dealing with this shelter-in-place reality, and compared to what you're describing, our shelter-in-place seems pretty innocuous. I can't think of a better word.
Gosh. Relaxed.
Yeah, very simple compared to, government agents, you know, keeping you in your home. But I wonder if you could talk about what shelter in place looks like for some of the families that you work with. I mean, for a lot of people, it's different. I mean, in the United States, we have so many varying ways that it looks, you know. For some people, it is a stressor because they're home with kids that they, you know, that would normally be at school. Or maybe it's a stressor because they're in relationships that are unhealthy. But for the most part, it seems like it's more of an inconvenience, I think, is the way that I would describe it, than it is, you know, a real life or death situation. So I wonder what does shelter in place mean for some of the families that you work with?
Yeah, I love that question because I've been thinking a little bit about the comparison to the United States, where we kind of, you know, I hear people focusing on the difference between introverts and extroverts and how they respond to a situation like this, that introverts are all in heaven and the extroverts are really struggling.
Yes. Thank you. I am struggling.
And we are loving it.
Yeah. Right. This is your time to shine.
That's right.
Oh, we're just basking in the glory of aloneness.
What's really interesting to me, though, in light of that comparison, is the comparison culturally between cultures who largely live indoors and operate indoors and cultures who live very communally outdoors and interact on a very regular basis. And nearly all of the countries where Children of Promise has projects are hot, what we call hot climate cultures, or cultures that live largely outside, who do business outside, who interact communally. And so one of the things that really struck me with regard to that was we had really, unfortunately, a child who died recently at a program in Rwanda. And it's always tragic, of course, when anyone dies.
Absolutely.
But in that situation and in that culture, the community coming together in support of that family and grieving as a body, not grieving as individuals, but grieving as a community at the loss of a member of that community, is a really significant part of their cultural existence and how they operate. And so to not be able to have those times of togetherness, physical togetherness, where they can be present with one another, face to face, touching one another, you know, that for us as an individual culture, that's not as big a deal because that's just kind of our norm. But in places where they need to be together and it's just a part of how they live, it's not just an inconvenience. It's a missing part of their cultural makeup that affects them not just logistically, but affects them very emotionally and personally.
Isolation then would be so much more difficult to deal with in that kind of a situation, that kind of a culture, than it would be.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just getting caught up on my Netflix where, you know, there's... And I can do that, and I can still remain connected. You know, are a lot of the places where you work, is technology at a level where they're able to stay connected the way that people in the United States are in terms of Zoom calls on a regular basis? Or, you know, for them, is it mostly like via programs like WhatsApp? Or, you know, are they able to do that? Or do they just feel a sense of disconnection even without, you know, the opportunity to utilize technology?
There is certainly a significant disconnect for people, not 100%, but in most places, people might have a cell phone. It may or may not be a smartphone, so maybe they can make phone calls or text other people. Some people would be able to access social media, Facebook and things on their phone, but as far as live streaming a church service, or when the schools are shut down, the kids doing e-learning, that's just not a feasible option for the vast majority of our kids. So for them to lose 3, 6, 9 months of schoolwork, it's really going to have a significant impact on them.
Yeah.
Sure. Mike was talking about the hot climate culture. And, you know, many of our families, they use their home structure just for sleeping. That's the only purpose for that building. And so to suddenly be required to stay in that, you know, 10 by 10, 10 foot by 10 foot space with all 6 or 8 people who sleep in that structure, it's a significantly different experience than what we're having in the US, where we have our comfy couches and we're binging on Netflix, mm-hmm. and FaceTime calls with all of our family and all of those kinds of things. It's, yeah. And then to, you know, just to add on to that, but they're so relational and everything is done in community.
Yep.
It really is like severing a limb, you mm-hmm. know, it's a very significant challenge for them.
I would say though, that I just wanted to add that it's been interesting to me, however, to see the lengths to which people will go to make the connection when it's really important to them. And we are hearing in some places about streaming services. In Latin America, we're hearing about that in a few spots. In Asia, we're hearing about that in a few spots. And even in places where the technology is still quite limited, when it's such a significant part of the cultural makeup to be together and to meet and, you know, to have a communal existence, often they'll find a way. So I've been encouraged by that people are finding a way, but it is a significant struggle.
When I think about significant holidays like Easter, which we just recently passed, That was difficult, I think, in American culture to not, especially American Christian culture, not to be able to be with family and to go and connect in with church. But I can't imagine in these communal cultures where, you know, for a lot of our churches in the States, going online was maybe a frustration they had to deal with for a couple weeks, but now they've kind of figured out the systems, that the infrastructure is there. It was just a matter of kind of pulling the trigger and making that happen. For a lot of our the churches around the world, that's not really an option, or at least not an option in the same way or as easily as it is maybe in the United States. And so not only are they losing the day-to-day communal life, but also those significant markers as the Christians, you know, of meeting together for Easter are also being taken away, you know, or being having to be isolated during those moments. I think that would be just an added challenge to add, not just the emotional isolation, but also spiritual isolation from brothers and sisters in Christ.
Yeah, we've heard quite a bit of feedback from directors that the children in their families are certainly feeling isolation, but that's also producing a sense of anxiety and a lack of hope. Like, when is this thing going to be over? When are we going to be able to move on from this? And because timelines continually get extended, or the regulations are maybe not always entirely clear about what's allowed and what's not allowed, there's also that sense of just confusion about what is going on and what really is the news and what really is happening. So people are struggling. I mean, they're frustrated and they're anxious and they're worried and they're uncertain about what's happening.
You guys have been in this position for how long now?
Just since August, so not too long.
So a long time. You have a lot of experience. You start in August and then global pandemic 6 months later. So
exactly,
really yeah. Easy ways to get started into a new role.
So, and that's why I wanted to ask you guys, moving into a new position like this, I know that Children of Promise was a familiar organization to you prior to taking this position, but moving into this position, overseeing a global ministry organization, going through a global crisis like this with, you know, lots of affected people and churches and implications of all that. What have you guys, or what are you guys learning about yourselves, about each other, about your ministry organization as you lead through this crisis?
I would say the first thing that comes to my mind is how incredibly grateful we are for those who have preceded us in leadership in this organization, because well, and also I'm thankful that this didn't happen, you know, a month in. At least we had a few months to kind of get our feet under us.
Right.
But I'm just so grateful to the Max Fields and the Johnsons, who really paved a way. There's just such a strong infrastructure of communication and relationships, and the network is established such that we're able to respond to requests according to the structure that already exists. We didn't come into an organization that needed to be rebuilt or that had, you know, to be fixed in a number of ways. We just came in to pick up where another wonderful leader has left off. And so we're just really grateful for that, because it means that the learning part of our transition into this role has been relatively smooth. The people that we work with are extremely competent. The network that we've joined is not just valuable, it's incredible. So as people are making requests for emergency funds to supplement sponsorship funding that we already send on a monthly basis to all these places, the systems are already in place for us to be able to do that effectively and efficiently. And so that's been a real relief to us, that we haven't had to figure that out, because it's already in place to be able to do it. And so although it's been a little bit stressful, just the nature of dealing with a crisis and learning a new role and being in a leadership position that requires a heavy weight of responsibility, it's made much lighter by the fact that we had great leaders ahead of us who really created those systems and built that network to be as effective and efficient as it is.
I would add to that our office staff is so gracious and just willing to go above and beyond. It's been an adjustment for everybody all over the place, figuring out how to work remotely. But our office staff is just really wonderful and ready to take things off of our plate as much as they're able to, and help one another out. And it's been a wonderful place to serve.
I wanted to add too that you asked specifically at the beginning of your question about what What have we learned about ourselves? And I'm really actually grateful to Global Strategy as well. Previous to this responsibility, this job, we were regional coordinators in Africa for Global Strategy. And that role was a role that Heather and I shared, that we both committed to and we both served. And so for years, we got used to figuring out how to lead together. And we learned that because Global Strategy entrusted us with that role to do together. So now in this role of leadership, we continue to work as a team, two people leading in a unified way. And we learned those skills because of our time with Global Strategy. And so that served us really, really well. We've kind of worked in, you know, very closely in ministry for a long time anyway, just in our marriage. But to be able to pull from those skills that we gained as regional coordinators in Africa and apply them to our role as executive directors and Children of Promise has been a super valuable thing. We just naturally gravitate, I think, often to the things that we're each gifted at. And thankfully, in our mutual role in leadership, we have supplemental gifts and not, you know, the thing
overlapping.
That's right. The things where I'm weak, Heather tends to be strong. And the things where Heather doesn't have as much strength, I tend to have a little bit more giftedness.
Isn't that sweet how he didn't say where I'm weak?
He did. He didn't say weakness. I'm going to have to, that's a good one.
He very carefully chose those words.
But I'm just really thankful for that season of learning how to lead together and it wasn't always easy. You know, we still make mistakes. We made mistakes during that season as well. And we figure it out as we go. But we really had a long runway of figuring out how to lead as a unified couple.
So you guys working from home, you're actually coworkers then working from home. So yeah. There are multiple people from your office in one location together.
That's true.
Right.
And we're not 6 feet apart either.
Yeah. And that's one of the things. I mean, and maybe we'll have you guys back on for another conversation because, you know, I think, you know, you came from Global Strategy and working in a regional coordinator role as missionaries. That's a reality for a lot of missionaries, you know, coming onto the field, especially in something that we're going to be venturing into in terms of working together. And
meaning you and Stacy, right? For those that aren't following along at home, you and Stacy are now going to have to. Do you like how I said that? You're going to get to. It's going to be a wonderful opportunity and gift to work together.
It's one way to think about it. Yeah. No, no. And it's something that Stacy and I are looking forward to, but it's just going to, I'm sure there will be a lot of bumps along the way of figuring that out, you know, but we've had 24 years of marriage experience to kind of help us get started in that. So
I think that's more rare in the world. And I think that there's something really beautiful about being able to do ministry together. And so I think it happens sometimes naturally in church settings, but for it to be not just a happenstance, but a purposeful choice to work together, I think is really cool and a really neat opportunity for you to both be engaged in ministry you're passionate about and be able to do that together is really cool.
We've come across a lot of people over the years who have said, you guys work together? Oh, I could never do that with my spouse. I'm just so grateful that not only do we work well together, but we actually enjoy it too. And we enjoy the time that we get to spend together in ministry together.
Well, and I think too, in times like this, where if there was one person at the head of the organization, having to make decisions, you know, kind of in a vacuum by themselves, that can be a very difficult task at hand, I think. But to have a team at the top where you can co-lead and run ideas and decisions and thoughts by each other, I mean, that's got to be a great, great thing.
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, to know that we're not just making an isolated decision or decision in a vacuum, that we get to collaborate and put our heads together. And we also have a phenomenal board and staff that are always available to us. And so we really take our leadership role as a, you know, from a team approach. We want as many qualified and seasoned voices to be a part of the decisions that we make as possible, because we know that we don't have it all figured out. And I'm really grateful that we had our years living overseas and that we have that frame of reference, you know, to pull from, that we have an understanding of what it looks like to live in a cross-cultural setting, to live in a developing world setting, and the real effects of a crisis like this as it impacts the local families in developing world settings. So to have that frame of reference that certainly gives us a leg up in being able to make decisions that don't impede ministry, but rather move it forward.
You know, the name of our podcast is A World of Good. And I find it interesting because we find ourselves having lots of conversations about difficult topics, like persecution. Was it when you talked to the Beverleys about persecution? And we've talked about with Kyle Hayes about dealing with the tornado destruction in Dayton. I mean, but through all of that, seeing that God is still good and God is still at work. And so once again, we come to this moment where I want to ask, you know, what good do you see God doing? Where is God at work in the world where you see good happening, even in the midst of the difficult time we're in right now as a global community?
Right now, people are just so afraid. Every place that we've talked to, people are just afraid. So it's hard for them to be able to vocalize and to see at this moment how God is working and what God is doing.
You've talked about before how so many cultures, they may not be future thinkers in terms of the way that, and so they're living right now in the present, and the present is the anxiety.
Yeah.
And so I think that for some people to be able to think towards what may be coming, that, oh, there is a hope, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. Oh, let's think about what God could do through this. That's a stretch even culturally in the way that people see their world and understand their world. And so that may be part of the challenge as well. You know, people are living in the moment, and the moment right now is a really terrifying one for lots of people.
I was really encouraged by a story that I heard yesterday from one of our directors that had a birthday. And one of the things that we've learned about all of the directors is that they are extremely generous. They're not employed by us. They're not paid by us to do the work. They feel called to ministry, and they're already serving pastorally in their local communities in one way or another. But what was so impactful to me about this story that I heard yesterday is it was her birthday, and she just didn't feel like it was a good idea to be real celebratory or to do, you know, a whole lot of special things to recognize her birthday because people are struggling. And so she had some resources available to her for her birthday and decided that rather than spending them on herself, she was going to buy, literally it was like 300 pizzas or something like that. Whatever she did, she decided that she was going to use these resources to minister to the local hunger needs in her community rather than celebrate herself. And that's the kind of thing that we hear from our directors all the time. Aside from the stories of children who achieve amazing things because of their access to education and nutrition, to see the directors going above and beyond, going that extra mile to minister to the local needs that they see rather than focusing on their own needs, is something that we also see really consistently. And that really was an encouragement to me yesterday.
That's awesome. That's incredible. Well, Mike and Heather, thank you so much for just sharing with us today what's going on at Children of Promise. For those that are listening, in the links section, you can find links to Children of Promise's webpage, information about the work that they're doing. If you want to connect in and support the work, connecting with a child, there's opportunities there as well. And so make sure you check out that information. Mike and Heather, thanks for your time today. We'll definitely have to have you on again to talk more about the work that you're doing and the things that you're seeing and how God is at work in the places where you're serving, the 30 different countries around the world where Children of Promise is making an impact.
Thanks, Andrew. Thanks, Nate.
Our pleasure to participate.
Thanks for listening to A World of Good. A World of Good is a podcast production of Global Strategy and Church of God Ministries. Our theme song is Colorado by Leo Flores. If you want to join the conversation, visit us at Twitter at A World of Good Pod, on Instagram, A World of Good Podcast, or visit our website, chogglobal.org/A World of Good. And join us next time as we share more stories of good from around the world.